Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, September 7th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. The International Monetary Fund says Zimbabwe should reform its labor laws and revive the country's industrial capacity if the country is to revive its ailing economy.
There's been some progress on labor reforms, which was also another constraint, I think, on the economy. We hope that government will take the steps that have been articulated to us in terms of further reform.
Economists say ZIMRA's move to charge customs duty on luxury goods will increase revenue inflows, but may also fuel smuggling and corruption if local companies fail to deliver.
They may work in the short term, but in the long run, they don't work. So we need to capacitate our economy. We need to capacitate our local industry so that they're able to compete with external competitors.
And the U.S. dentist who killed one of Zimbabwe's most beloved lions in July, causing an international uproar about trophy hunting, has emerged from weeks of silence and has given an interview. These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. The International Monetary Fund says Zimbabwe should reform its labor laws and revive the country's industrial capacity if the country is to start experiencing an economic boom. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
The IMF's alternate executive director for its Africa Group 1 constituency, that includes Zimbabwe, Chileshe Mpumbu Kapwepwe, told a news conference in the capital today that Harare should reform labor laws and reopen closed industries to improve the country's productive capacity. Hundreds of companies have closed shop since the disputed 2013 elections, while more than 25,000 employees have lost their jobs this year alone, according to the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions. Kapwepwe says reopening industries and reforming labor laws would act as catalysts in reviving the country's moribund economy.
There's been some progress on labor reforms, which was also another constraint, I think, on the economy. We hope that government will take the steps that have been articulated to us in terms of further reform to remove the constraints that are affecting the growth of the economy.
Kapwepwe, who is Zambia's former deputy finance minister, says the IMF is happy with Zimbabwe's implementation of the staff monitored program, although it has some areas of concern.
The question of the impact of the drought on the food production, I think we see that as a major challenge. And also we look at the underperformance in the manufacturing capacity, which are all major contributors to the revenue side.
Meanwhile, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says the government has asked for a meeting with the international creditors that include the IMF, World Bank and the African Development Bank on the sidelines of the World Bank annual general meeting in Peru's capital Lima so that Zimbabwe can present its case for fresh funding that it badly needs to inject into the economy. The minister said the country is battling to clear its debt arrears that now amount to $1.8 billion. Authorities say the country's debt overhang is hovering around $10 billion.
But we agreed this at the spring meetings that we should have a platform to engage and present our case to the multilateral creditors, the Paris Club creditors, the major decision makers. So we hope to be able to have them on one platform and be able to put our case across.
As a result of Zimbabwe's failure to clear its debt, Harare is failing to access fresh lines of credit from international money lending institutions. Meanwhile, Chinamasa said the economic slowdown in China is affecting trade between Harare and Beijing.
China at the moment is the biggest market for commodities. When we are talking about commodities, we are talking about raw materials of whatever nature you mention, minerals or otherwise, or agricultural. It is a great consumer. So any slowdown will naturally affect the prices of these products into their market. But as a countermeasure, especially with respect to minerals, we are trying to ramp up volumes to make up for the loss of price, and we hope that strategy will work so that where we are losing on price, we'll be able to compensate it by selling more volumes if the market remains so. But obviously it will affect us.
Despite China's economic slowdown, Chinamasa said he is expecting the Chinese to invest in Zimbabwe, particularly in infrastructure development projects such as the dualization of the country's road network. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Economists, among them Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, say the move by the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority to charge customs duty on luxury goods being brought into the country will help improve the country's revenue inflows and protect struggling industries from external competition. Chitambara, however, says though the move is good, local companies do not have capacity to produce enough to satisfy local demand. ZIMRA recently published an instrument advising that with effect from September 1st, 2015, customs duty will be charged on commodities such as blankets, cooking oil, eggs, meat, fish, sugar, beds and mattresses, maize meal and honey. Chitambara tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri the move by ZIMRA may fuel smuggling and corruption due to demand.
Locally produced commodities are way more expensive when you compare with these imports. Even after adding for duties, in some cases, the imports are still cheaper than our own locally produced commodities. So I think for me, that has been the major reason why many local consumers have been preferring to buy imports from other countries. So it's to do with the economic rationale of the high cost of locally produced commodities prevailing in Zimbabwe.
But will this not fuel illegal importation of these goods into the country?
Definitely it will fuel smuggling of these products into the country. That's what always happens the world over. When a government decides to come up with controls, there will be consumers or people in general will try to look and find ways and means of circumventing these controls through the smuggling.
What would you recommend be done to address this issue?
I think what needs to be done, number one, is that we need to address and to deal ruthlessly with the issues of competitiveness so that our economy becomes competitive, so that we can also even, because the idea of protectionist measures actually, in the long run, they don't work. They may work in the short term, but in the long run, they don't work. So we need to capacitate our economy. We need to capacitate our local industry so that they are able to compete with external competitors.
That was Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe economist Prosper Chitambara speaking on the line with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. Schools open for the third term tomorrow, with most parents resorting to loan sharks to secure funds to pay fees as the economic crisis continues. Parents of school-going children in Mutare, Gwanda, Harare and Bulawayo, who spoke with Studio 7, said they are struggling to pay fees and related education costs, which remained unchanged this term in most schools. Two of the parents, Bernard Samuriwo of Mutare and Bekezela Maduma of Gwanda, said the situation looks bleak for most children who may fail to attend lessons due to unpaid fees. Maduma tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube parents are not sure how school authorities will handle children that have not yet paid fees.
We're going around today, you know, trying to do the last minute rush and all those things. It looks like it's not going to be as easy for most parents. People haven't been able to raise school fees, they haven't been able to raise stationery and all sorts of things as the kids are going back to school. The people who are thriving on this are the loan sharks and all these other small people that lend out money. It looks like that's how people are going to make it going back to school.
Are people going to manage to pay this kind of money back?
I certainly don't think so, because the person is just trying to get the kid to get to school and no plan how he's going to recover that money and pay it back. You know, most people are sitting on 2-3 months notices from their workplaces, and they're just doing it on hope, thinking that maybe something will come up, but what will come up, your guess is as good as mine.
Now, looking at the fees that is going to be charged this term, how is it now?
Boarding schools mostly around about $500 to $600. Most parents have been at least working or vending in between the term, trying to raise something so that when they go to school, at least somebody pays something. But the vending was blocked. People are no longer at work. It's really a mystery how people are going to raise that kind of money.
That was Bekezela Maduma of Gwanda speaking with Studio 7 from the Matabeleland South Provincial Capital. Education Minister Lazarus Lokora was not immediately reachable for comment. A ceremonial Ndebele king may soon be installed to serve his people after years of discussions between the state and his descendants. This was revealed during weekend commemorations to celebrate the life of King Mzilikazi Khumalo, who died in 1868. For the first time since the commemoration started in 2000 at Mhlahlandlela, believed to be to have been the king's quarrel just outside Bulawayo, a top government official attended. It was Vice President Phelekezela Mphoko. In his speech, Mphoko made an impassioned plea to the people to preserve their culture and equated Mhlahlandlela to the National Heroes Eka. Studio 7 spoke to one of the descendants of King Mzilikazi, Zwidekalanga Peter Khumalo, who says deliberations and consultations on the installation of the king were started in 1997 and appear to be coming to a conclusion.
I think it was the best thing that could have ever happened this year for us. We certainly got reminded of the year 2000 celebrations, where we had over 10,000 people at all Bulawayo celebrating the commemoration, the death of King Mzilikazi. We had speakers there that touched on a variety of things that relate to our identity and our culture and our norms and the other aspects that relate to who we are.
We understand that there was also Vice President Mphoko. Can you tell us what he said?
The Vice President did not come there as a Vice President. He was, of course, respected and recognized that he's the Vice President of this country, that we cannot rule out. But he came there mainly as an individual that has the right and interest to celebrate the commemoration of King Mzilikazi. Because remember that his family, one of his elderly people, was actually a chief. He spoke very well in us preserving our culture and our identity, and that we should continue to strengthen up that celebration and the togetherness of the people.
That was Zwidekalanga Peter Khumalo, a descendant of King Mzilikazi. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo. The U.S. dentist who killed one of Zimbabwe's most beloved lions in July, causing an international uproar about trophy hunting, has emerged from weeks of silence and has given an interview. Walter Palmer said in an interview conducted jointly yesterday by the Minneapolis Star Tribune and the Associated Press that, quote, "If I had known this lion had a name and was important to the country or study, obviously I wouldn't have taken it. Nobody in our hunting party knew before or after the name of this lion." Palmer killed a rare black maned lion affectionately known as Cecil the Lion, who was being tracked with a GPS collar as part of an Oxford University research project. Cecil was a well-known fixture at Zimbabwe's vast Wange National Park. The 55-year-old dentist said the hunt was legal and he was not being charged with a crime. Palmer said that he shot the animal with an arrow from his compound bow outside the park's border, but Cecil did not die immediately. He disputed accounts that the wounded animal wandered for 40 hours and was finished off with a gun. He said the lion was tracked down the next day and killed with another arrow. He did not reveal how much he paid for the guided safari hunt outside of Hwange, saying only that it was not more than $50,000, as reported in the media.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, the Health Forum with Tatenda Gumbo. But first, a look at regional and international news. Security officers charged former Chadian dictator Hissène Habré into court today after he refused to take part in his trial on war crimes charges. Guards then had to physically restrain the 72-year-old Habré as he thrashed about in his seat and shouted abuse at the court as the indictment against him was read. The Kentucky court clerk, who is defying a U.S. federal judge's order to issue marriage licenses to same couples, remained in jail today, even as her lawyer appeals through the ruling that landed her behind bars. And the stream of refugees into Europe continued today. The passage through Hungary is much smoother than it was last week, when the Central European nation seemed ready to do whatever it could to prevent the migrants from entering the wealthier Western European nations. Results of a study conducted by the Center for Sexual Health and HIV/AIDS Research, or CESHER, show that the stigmatization and discrimination of sex workers at some of the country's hospitals and clinics is hampering their access to increased HIV/AIDS treatment and care. Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Presenting the study findings during a Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights Health Forum for Journalists, Sesha Programs Director Svong Limtetwa said, stigmatization and discrimination are some of the major barriers to health access by sex workers in the country. She said the study, dubbed Sisters with a Voice and conducted since 2009, revealed rampant stigmatization and discrimination in healthcare centers is discouraging some sex workers from seeking health care, particularly in public health institutions. In some instances, she said, sex workers were being described as prostitutes and accused of spreading HIV/AIDS by health workers.
First word to me were, so you're a prostitute and you actually have the guts to come here to waste our time and drugs on you. Why do you do such things anyway? Why can't you find a man of your own and get married? I was so hurt.
She adds sex workers had told social researchers that because of public humiliation, they were now hesitant to seek medical attention.
And then this one was saying, the nurse said to me, how can a sex worker have high blood pressure? And then she says, it's high because of too much sex. You are wasting our drugs instead of us giving them to those who have proper high blood pressure, caused by women like you, when you take and infect their husbands and them eventually.
Mutetwa said sex workers were also being abused by their clients, with the police not doing much to help. Female police officers alleged Mutetwa dismissed their sex workers' reports and accused them of spreading HIV/AIDS, also deterring the sex workers from approaching health institutions to access critical treatment, care and support services. Other key findings of the study were that of the 52,214 people who visited Sesha clinics since 2009, 26,090 had been treated for sexually transmitted diseases and 20% had tested HIV positive. The report also established that sex work is common in Zimbabwe, with 20% of women surveyed having started selling sex before they turned 20 years of age. Mutetwa said Sesha had Adventist partners are stepping up efforts to train healthcare workers so they are friendly to sex workers to increase their access to treatment, treatment literacy, and psychosocial support. The National AIDS Council's Key Populations Coordinator Tendai Maka said NAC has been supporting the establishment of an association of sex workers, saying it will allow them to discuss issues of concern.
We feel that because of the environment we are operating in, at times it's good for the key populations to talk on their own. In the same way as we get statements from girls once in a while, we also want to be getting statements from the Sex Worker Association to remind those policymakers on what's happening, on the realities on the ground, so that as they are making their policies, they are informed by lived experiences.
Experts say the failure to include sex workers in HIV prevention and care programs will derail Harare's efforts to achieve its goal of zero new infections, zero deaths, and zero stigma. The Sisters with a Voice program provides a range of sexual and reproductive health services, including HIV testing and counseling. It also provides legal advice. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Meanwhile, experts say homophobia and criminalization of homosexuality seems to be playing a major role in the alarming increase of HIV infections in Africa. Researchers from Oxford University, the Population Council of Ghana, and the Kenya Medical Research Institute reviewed AIDS studies conducted over the past few years and concluded that male-to-male sex was a major blind spot in AIDS research and policy in Africa. Tato Mochone, a Mandela Washington Fellow on Attachment with Studio 7, reached out to Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe program manager Sam Chimoyo and asked about Lesotho's Matrix of the People to discuss the issue.
Well, I think the challenge we have is that irrespective of organizations like GALS existing, it doesn't mean that every gay man, every bisexual man, or every MSM will approach an institution like us. You also need to understand that organizations like us also face stigma by the community and also with the state as well. So you find that the services that we have are only covering a minute of the target group that we are supposed to provide services to.
To you, Mr. Motopeng, as a director of Matrix, an institution that advocates for the right of the LGBTI, so what is it that you are doing as an organization to educate the gay community about HIV and AIDS?
Recently, we have been focusing on the MSM population, and then we have started also with the trans community because we realized that we're leaving others behind, and lately we have started with the lesbian and WSW population. And then we also extended our partnership with Ministry of Health, where we're working together to make sure that within the national programming we have the inclusiveness of LGBTI population. Since last year, we've been working with the health practitioners, sensitizing them around LGBTI issues because we realized that there is a lot of stigma and discrimination within health facilities.
In your part in Zimbabwe, what is it that you're doing to sensitize and raise awareness about the risk of infection and to teach the general LGBTI community about good health practices?
For GALS to be formed, it was also around the issue of people who were dying of HIV. So the HIV program became our main focus. And originally, of course, it was focusing a lot around MSM to have dialogue, discussion groups, and also try and create a referral system for them. And mainly it was focusing also on the private doctors that were more receptive to provide healthcare for men. And today, we do have HIV programs that are focusing on the LGBTI community. We have discussion groups that we do around the country. We have what we call affinity groups. These are smaller groups that are scattered around the country that do have peer educators that are providing protective barrier methods. They are linking them to care. They are also educating and sensitizing them on various issues to do with human rights.
That was Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe program managers Sam Chimoyo and Tampose Motopeng of Matrix of the People Lesotho speaking with Tato Machone, I beg your pardon, Mochone, a Mandela Washington Fellow on Attachment with VOA Studio 7. Workers in America are commemorating Labor Day today with calls for the government to increase the minimum wage from $7.25 per hour to $10 and above. And in a major booster that will benefit more than 300,000 workers, President Obama will today sign guidelines compelling companies contracted by the government to pay sick leave. Zimbabwean Jablani Tembamoyo, based in Atlanta, Georgia, tells Studio 7 reporter Ntungameli Nkomo that he is celebrating Labor Day over barbecue, braai, and drinks with friends. He adds, it's high time the government addressed the issue of minimum wage to cushion workers from the high cost of living.
Labor Day, I'm going to spend it with friends. We're going to be barbecuing, drinking, and dancing.
Many people are complaining about the minimum wage. They want it raised from $7 to more than $10. What do you make of that?
I think it's long overdue. Minimum wage should have been increased by now, at least around $10 or more. I feel that people work so hard and they deserve to be paid just a little bit more. The cost of living has gone up. The groceries are expensive. Cost of gasoline goes up and down, and people's children, they have to dress the children and send them to school and take vacations. With a minimum wage of under $10, that would be very, very difficult to do.
But given the polarization between politicians on that issue, how possible is it that we may see a raise anytime soon?
I do believe that most politicians have already planted the seed. They are already talking about it, and they're gaining a lot of ground and support. We should be seeing it around 2016, 2017. We should see people getting a raise above minimum wage.
That was Jablani Tembamoyo, a Zimbabwean based in the United States. He was speaking on the phone with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo from Atlanta, Georgia. And in sports news, Zimbabwean soccer fans are livid that their team failed to beat Guinea in an African Cup of Nations qualifier at Rufaro Stadium yesterday. The Warriors drew 1-1 with the Sili National of Guinea. Thousands were already angry that they were not able to watch the match from the terraces because Zifa had moved the match to the smaller Rufaro from the National Sports Stadium. Jonga Kandemiri spoke with former Warriors player Alois Bunjira for his take on yesterday's match.
We played to avoid defeat instead of playing to win. That's how it was fine. We played cautiously with two defensive midfielders that were not pushing forward. And we played with two attacking strikers. I didn't understand how could we play with two defensive midfielders and two outside strikers, because it left a hole between those two. I thought we could have played with one withdrawn striker who was very capable of playing both in midfield and attacking, but we didn't have. But nevertheless, we played. After we realized that Guinea were not very threatening, they were not a dangerous side, we could have killed one of the defensive midfielders and played with one and added another attacking player who could supply the strikers with the ball and made sure that our fullbacks operated very well and put in crosses for Nyasha and Captain Malagelo. But we didn't have that. We didn't go forward for the kill. That's my beef. We didn't realize that we can actually beat this team. We maintain the game from the first minute to the 90th minute, very conscious and avoiding defeat. At home, we were supposed to kill them, and we didn't go for the kill. That's my disappointment. But otherwise, that 1 point, yes, we can take it. But for me, it's a consolation. We can't go out and say we are able to draw. No, but it's like at least we got a point, but not something to celebrate about.
So do you see the Warriors progressing in this group?
Yes, the candidates are very, very, very bright.
That was former Warriors Alois Crisscross Bunjira on the line from Harare with Jonga Kandemiri. And now a quick recap of today's top stories. The International Monetary Fund says Zimbabwe should reform its labor laws and revive the country's industrial capacity. Economists say Zimbra's move to charge customs duty on luxury goods will increase revenue, but may also fuel smuggling. That's all we had for you tonight. My name is Chris Gandhi. Let's meet again tomorrow, same time, same frequencies, same station. Good night.